Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 529 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Now, today I'm joined by one of my besties. Absolutely, is Dr. Becca Jordre, and she is extraordinary. I just saw her in Iowa, at the University of Iowa, where we conducted the National Senior Games, and where she is the one and only great scientist following these little happy campers, these senior Olympians, and studying them and publishing and teaching us all about how they stay fit, how they maintain resilience, how they do their thing. So Dr. Jordre is a professor of physical therapy. So listen up. She knows what she's talking about. In the School of Health Sciences at the University of South Dakota, where she's been recognized with awards for teaching excellence, research achievement, and outstanding service. And one of the things I have been most impressed with is her absolute passion for learning about these people in the aging process. So, Becca, welcome to the Her podcast.
Wow, thank you for the amazing introduction. I feel accomplished right now.
All the time. I know. That's my whole point. I have to make you feel accomplished, even if you're having one of those funky days. So recently, you and I were both featured in the Washington Post. We're just like kind of hanging out together and doing our thing. And this was an article, it was a feature article called "Many People Are Playing Sports in Their 60s and Beyond. Why That's Smart." And the actual author, whose name is Bob Brody, he's a really cool guy, is older himself. And so I'm going to start the article out so you understand where all this goes, and then where you, Becca, and I came in. So the article starts out, last year at age 72, right? After a gap of almost 40 years, I resumed taking tennis lessons. I figured that if I'm going to be the next Roger Federer, what better time to start than, I don't know, right now? Many older Americans are playing sports. The number of Americans age 60 and over who play a sport was 43% in 2025. Whoa, those folk are getting up and moving, Becca. The number of athletes who compete in the National Senior Games, that's us. A biennial event in which participants age 50 and above compete in more than 25 sports, more than, hold on to your bra straps, girlfriends, more than quadrupled from 2,500 participants in 1987 to 11,681 in 2023. The number of Americans 55 and older who played tennis at least one time a week was 4.3 million in 2024. So what I know from the 2025 games, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we were over 13,000 participants this go around.
I think this was a record year for their attendance.
Yeah.
And even from registration to attendance, I think they had so many more even show up than they expected. Sometimes there's some attrition there, but I know they were scrambling at the end, making sure they had enough athlete bags as people came in because so many people were there. It was just great.
It was so amazing to see these people. So here's where I came in. Older athletes might be even more numerous than the statistics show because so many people play sports without joining a league or competing, said Pamela Peek, physician, researcher, and member of the board of the American College of Sports Medicine. All right, you can extrapolate from the data available that more seniors in general are getting out there. Yay. Yay, yay, yay. And then it goes on and on. Like, why are they doing this? Maintain good health. Make friends. Now, ooh, stop. make friends. So the new book that came out by one of my colleagues at Scripps called Super Agers, which is kind of cool. You've probably seen it, obviously, says that the number one criterion for great longevity is relationships. It has nothing to do with like how many calories you crunched today. No, it's connection. So make friends, join a community, feel a sense of achievement, compete against others, right? Basically, I think they left out the part, have fun. Just get out there and just kind of rock and roll. And then, oh, they've got so much great stuff here. Hold on now. Here it is. So the National Senior Games Association developed a tool that screens for physical fitness in older athletes, competitive and otherwise, and is called the Sustained Athlete Fitness Exam, or SAFE, S-A-F-E. And it consists of a health history questionnaire, physical fitness test. It's based on studies conducted over 11 years that measured cardiovascular disease, diabetes, low bone density, falls, and other factors in more than 3,000 older athletes with a median age of 67. This is where you come in, Becca, you little famous person, you. It's available for free to anyone who wants to take it, said Becca Jordre, who created the exam. Whoa, created, and is a professor of physical therapy at the University of South Dakota and a clinical specialist in geriatric physical therapy for aging adults. Just remember, it's much more dangerous to your health to sit around all day and do nothing than it is to go cycling or play volleyball. That was your quote. Yay. Okay. Now, what in the heck is going on with these senior athletes, Becca? You're the one who's like the Swiss bank account with all of the data as you've been publishing and back and forth. Let's look at women. The hell with men. Let's go. Let's look at women. This is the
We haven't
show.
Enough, have we? Yes. No one looks at women in research enough. So yes, please.
Yeah. So let's just be crazy about it. All right, shall we? All right. So how do women age differently than men from the fitness testing that you've done with these happy campers for many years now? You've been at how many, four games now?
Oh, my goodness. Games? This was my eighth games.
Oh my gosh, that's every other year.
Every other year. So yeah, my son was an infant when I started and he's heading off to college. So this has been my life's work, really.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay, so let's go to women. All right, let's start sharing some secrets about what happens with women. Okay, what are some of the aha moments you've had? Like, wow, I didn't know that was true or whatever.
The thing I think is most interesting when we looked at the most recent paper that we published about the SAFE, about the tool, women scored better than men. I mean, if you just want to look at overall composite scores, the 20-point test, the SAFE, and women had a median score of 13, whereas men had a median score of 12. And that might seem minor, but men had a median score of 12 that persisted over each age group. Every 5 years, they stayed at 12. Women in the youngest age group at 50 to 55, they actually started at 14, so 2 points above the median of men. And then they drop down to 13, but they stay at 13 for several increments of age before they kind of get back into the median of 12 again. And when we saw that, what we were really hoping with the way we were scoring the SAFE is that we were adjusting for age and gender appropriately so that there wouldn't be real big differences. And we started looking at why that might be happening. And one of the things I came across as I was reading was that generally in the past, when I have studied women, the research sort of says, well, women underperform compared to men. They're not as physically fit. They don't do as well on these measures of physical performance. And I found another source that said that might actually be because they were never actually studied. So they were not actually included in the studies of physical performance. So when you start comparing, you say, well, are you comparing women nose to nose to men, you know, or are you actually studying them for the first time? And I think there's a couple things in the women that have been coming and getting tested. You know, they volunteer to come and take this test at the senior games. And despite the fact that there's a pretty even mix between men and women at the games, more women come and get tested. I think they're more interested in learning about their health. Love the guys too, but the women are the ones that are really letting themselves come in and get tested, and which is sometimes hard because they're going to learn some things that they need to work on.
I walked in there a number of times just to observe, and then I actually took one test just for grins, and that was the hand grip test. Excuse me, hello.
You rocked it. This hand, you did amazing.
Yeah, totally rocked it. I couldn't believe it. So tell us about hand grip. Okay, what does hand grip mean, and why should people pay attention to it?
I'm glad you asked, because I think it gets confusing and people sometimes misinterpret what they're reading just in the headlines. We know hand grip strength is an indicator of overall vitality, well-being. It's attached to all sorts of health metrics, and we measure it in the SAFE, and we have found, wow, senior athletes do amazing on grip strength. So I've had a lot of athletes come back and say, I'm working on my hands. I got a hand grippy thing and I'm working on my hands. And it turns out that it's not about your hands. And I have some good friends in the occupational therapy and hand therapy world who say, don't let people do that. Like, that's not what it's about. And really, if your listeners right now even took their hand, bent their elbow down by their side and squeezed their fist as tight as they possibly could, just like they were trying to hold on for dear life, and really felt what's happening when you do that, you're going to feel your shoulder girdle, the muscles around your shoulder blade. You're going to feel your core, I hope. If you're trained and you know how to move your body, hopefully you're going to feel even like your pelvic floor tighten in that hand grip, because it takes so much more than just your fingers and your hand to distribute force into that hand grip dynamometer that we're measuring. So, and it's an indicator of overall vitality, because I think it's picking up on those people that have some reserve and some extra oomph to put behind that squeezing. And your fingers and your hand at the end are just where we're able to capture that measurement. It's not about what's happening in your hand. It's so much further up the chain and into the core than that. And I think that's an important thing.
Years ago, when I first heard about the hand grip, I went out and bought my own little hand grip thingy. It cost like $25. And I'll mention the company because I have nothing to do with it. It's Camry, Camry. It's available on Amazon and whatever. And I was just curious to know what mine was. I don't think anybody's ever measured me. And it comes with an entire sheet of paper that says what your gender and age are, and then what the numbers are related to that, if you're weak or average or strong, and kind of gives you ranges and stuff. So I thought, well, that's kind of cool. So for that one, you stand up and you really bear down, to your point. And I already knew by then the science said that this was a manifestation of my total body strength, or vitality, as you put it, and it has nothing to do with my hand. I mean, relatively speaking, obviously my hand has to be functioning. And I've always been anywhere between 15 years to 20 years younger in terms of the number I get, because I'm quite strong in my entire body. And I've always kind of watched this carefully over time. I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, okay, as you age, it's a bitch. It starts getting a little harder to hold on to that strength. But if you just sort of monitor it closely, hey, if you shave off 10 years even, that's awesome from, you know, your age and stuff. So I have a question for you. Your hand grip in the assessment was seated. Now, what's that about? Because I'm used to like standing up and getting my whole body involved in it. But yeah, I did the seated one, and it was obviously a research implement, not something you buy on Amazon. It was more fancy. So tell us about that.
You still did well on it, even though we made you sit, right? So part of that is just standardization. And the method we use is standard for the method that would be if you went into a physical therapy department and they tested you according to McGee's textbook, you'd have your elbow at 90 degrees and your shoulder down by your side, and you're not allowed to rest on anything or use other parts of your body to potentially like brace against or support yourself. And so we're really trying to standardize that position and standardize it with the method that's been used in the past for collection of norms. So when we compare, we do sort of the game that you've done and looked at the fact that you are stronger than your biological age would normally be. We play that game all the time. It's one of my favorite games. And we're able to do that because we're testing or comparing in the same way that those norms were generated. So when we published a paper on the senior athlete norms for grip strength, we were able to say, okay, we used the same method, the same position, the same tool. And now how does that look? And in terms of gender, women did even better than men in terms of being stronger by multiple decades than their community dwelling peers. So men did well, but women were even further away from those community dwelling norms. It was even more different for them.
And one of the things that kind of blew my mind was as I was observing all the little happy campers being evaluated by you and your fabulous team, were the aha moments like, oh man, I need to, and then fill in the blank. I need to spend more time on my legs. This is crazy, man. Or my glutes. I can't believe how weak they are, relatively speaking, and I could do so much better. And what I also love was you handed me basically exercises that you could do for any part of those body parts that needed help, whether it was strength, balance, flexibility, however. And I thought that the handouts were outstanding. I really, really liked them because they were simple to follow. And what I also love is the fact that they were really meant to work with an older body, not like at some 20-year-old. I don't see Michael Phelps really particularly interested in any of this. And I'm thinking
because he will be.
Oh, he will be soon.
It's just a matter of time.
Man. Yes. Michael,
just
we're
give us a call
for
when you need it. Just give us a call. We're here for you.
That's right. We're here. Don't you be kind of getting cute with us and saying, oh, I'll never need that. Yeah, you will. Just saying. Yeah, you will. So did you spend a lot of time putting this together? Were you the one who created all of those handouts and exercises?
So the prep that goes into the games every 2 years is immense. It takes a lot of ramp up time. I mean, we basically start at the time one games ends and start planning for the next one and taking notes and saying how maybe this could get better. And so it has improved exponentially since we started back in 2011. I have to give huge props to my colleague, Wendy Viviers. She is a physical therapist who was trained in South Africa, and she is the genius behind the handouts. She is the one who really has elevated that part of the SAFE and has really made sure that we don't underestimate the capabilities of the athletes that are attending the games. And I think a lot of athletes really came and sought us out this year because they wanted to make sure they were getting some of that training and some of that information that we had for them. Because I think so often they're just dismissed as doing well enough and not pushed to then say, our favorite thing to say is, you're doing great. I think you could do a little bit better. And I think this population receives that message really well because that's their goal. Their athletes are competitive. It's another sport to be at the SAFE and to score well there.
And it gives them another goal. It's
absolutely
like, oh, you want my glutes stronger? Not a problem whatsoever.
Yeah.
All right. So when I saw you, you gave me a bunch of stickers that went along with the SAFE, the SAFE program.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I took a picture of every one of them because I love them so much. So everyone out there, this is so beautiful. So here's one that says, I left quit in my other bag. Oh my God. These people do not quit. I just left quit in my other bag. And then I could bench press your grandkids. Ooh, there's a little hair that grew on your chest. Okay, this is one that just I love. They said, slow down. I laughed. You know, when they, oh, but you're older, slow down. No,
No.
Get a laugh. Laugh no. in your face. And I love this one. Oh, this is so... The only part broken, my brakes. The only part broken, my brakes. Oh, yeah. And then
that
I kick age in the glutes. I just think that's wonderful. And then this really, given my running history, over what hill? I ran it twice. So when you say that an older person is over the hill, over what hill? I ran it twice. I just can't even tell you how much I love that. It is so fabulous. So I just walked away so inspired. I was also just exhausted watching you do your thing. You were yeah. running around. People were coming and going. And of course, I made things worse because I was encouraging people to get in there and to get their evaluation. So they were starting to line up. And I could see that look on your face like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? And I just loved watching so many people engaged with their bodies. Again, looking specifically at women.
Yeah.
One of the things I found, Becca, and maybe you did too, and I'm kind of curious your thoughts. When I was asking women about their health and their well-being and how often they got exams and are they staying on top of everything from menopausal symptoms to postmenopausal, and that includes things like their bone health, for instance, it was kind of variable. I think I walked in there with some stereotypic thought that, oh, these people are so on top of their health and so on top of every single molecule in their body. And it may not necessarily be true. I think there's a little fudgy-wudgy going on. I don't know. What have you observed?
I think, and this is maybe if I have a mission in life, so this is it. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there about what it is, what it takes to be healthy. And we're all a result of what we were taught at the time we were paying attention to that. So the things I learned in gym class when I was a kid were related, well, you should stretch before you work out. Well, that's actually not true, right? And cardio is the best way to stay fit. Well, maybe I could have been taught a little bit more about strength training when I was young, right? I've had to figure that out as I've gone through my own research. So I think there's a lot of women who are just doing the best they can with the information that they have, and a whole slew of people that didn't even have, you know, their pre-Title IX. They were told they couldn't go and participate in sports. They had to sit on the sideline depending on what their sport was, what year it was, what, you know, what was considered appropriate. And they just weren't given those same opportunities to learn and change. And I think now we have access to so much more information, but we still have a lot of misinformation that rolls around and causes some issue with people. And, you know, I'll have women, I say, we really need to work on your strength. And we need, if you want to stay in the games and still be competitive, I'd like you to work more on your strength training. And they'll say, oh, I don't want to bulk up. I don't want to bulk up. And I'll say, I've been working on this hard for a decade. Am I bulked up? No. You know, like we don't have the right hormones. We're fighting a decline. We're not going to bulk up. It's just that we're not suddenly going to poof up and all be, I wish, right? I need that. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is that there's been variable information out there. And then what people have been exposed to is different. And some people are getting really great information now, but some are still being told to be careful, slow down, be more cautious. And I think that's why I included that in my quote to Bob Brody is, it's just more dangerous to not be active than it is to engage in this stuff and really push. So that's been my message.
I hear you loud and clear. So many women, as they're aging, get this message, you know, you're kind of fragile. And so there's your bones, you know, as you're coursing through the menopausal, postmenopausal years, what's happening to your bone mineral density? Obviously, it's decreasing somewhat. You could mitigate a lot of that by lifting weights and doing your thing and back and forth. But what's really interesting is that they keep getting this message that they shouldn't overextend themselves in a big way. And to your point, clearly you want to be strategic and careful. And obviously, if you need some guidance from a trainer, physical therapist, et cetera, that's the way to go. But your body loves to be physically challenged. You just need to do it in a strategically careful way. That's all. I mean, because every woman is different. Every woman is very special and unique in her own way. All right. Now, when we come back, I'm going to ask you about the survival pack. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. Okay, so one of the things everyone knows about me is I'm a body composition person. I've written on it. I've done a textbook chapter, on and on. I love body composition. Okay, so as a woman ages, her body composition is getting a little funkadelic. Okay, so you want to preserve muscle. That's important. You want to decrease as best you can excess body fat that is more dangerous to you. And that's the stuff deep inside your belly, the visceral fat that becomes, if it's excessive, clearly you need visceral fat, but you don't want it to be excessive. And so I've always been fascinated with the fat part. The muscle part's fairly straightforward. You and I kind of understand. Just want to lift those weights, optimize muscle function, strength, and performance as best you can. But what's up with the fat thing? So I've been encouraging you, and I'm going to work on this with you, to actually see about doing more body comp with these happy people, because I'd love to understand what's going on with body fat percentages. Because relatively speaking, and this is important, as you age over the age of 60, so in your 60s, you're in your seventh decade of life. And I don't care who you are, whether you're a master's, Olympian, or whatever's going on, you will drop some lean body mass. That's just age related. So, you know, that's truly age related. That has nothing to do with disuse or whatever else. Now, if you're already exercising and optimizing your strength training and your endurance and all the other great things that Dr. Jordre would have you do, you're still going to drop a little bit, but you're going to have a smaller drop. So it's like, you know, and that's why performance on the part of people in their 60s is quite different than performance on the part of people who are in their 40s and 50s. And it's just the way it is. It's just an aging process. I've been fascinated with the body fat piece in an interesting way because, you know, like, are these senior participants supposed to have like ripped bodies? You know, just like, I mean, what's the expectation? Are they supposed to have like muscles that are just popping out in a super low body fat percentage? Clearly, it depends upon the sport. And I'm probably looking at track and field. So for track, they tend to be more lean. They have to be, otherwise you can't get where you're going.
Yeah.
For field, it could be quite different because there you have a lot of strength going on. And so then the bodies are a little bit different. And swimming is exquisitely variable, I've found. So what have you found? Is it that when people come in, are they kind of down on themselves like, damn it, I really wanted to have a more ripped body. And I thought all this training would, you know, lead me to, and then I've got this little poochie here and it hasn't stopped me from doing a world record in the fill in the blank. But what's with the poochie?
You know, I think a lot of people come in with a negative body image. And these people, again, they're competitive. So they want to be the best and they want to look the way that they think they're supposed to look. And they get to the parts of the screen where we measure their waist circumference. We calculate their waist to hip ratio and we take their height and weight, their actual height and weight, and calculate their BMI. And I think calculating BMI was something that I was maybe a little bit reluctant to keep in the safe. I didn't want to keep it in there because I don't want to focus on weight. I don't want people to feel be told they're overweight. That's not the point. We kept it in because we're learning so much from this group. Ironically, body mass index is an estimate that works best for a typical or even younger adult who's sedentary. It doesn't work great for older adults and it does not work great for athletes because we have muscle mass. And muscle mass doesn't carry over nicely into that estimate. What I found, I think, is that the most successful, the most fit athletes do not look the way that you think they might need to look in order to be successful, because you have to have some mass. One of the keys, I think, to aging successfully is to have some reserve. If you don't have any reserve, you've got to have reserve in muscle. That's your best reserve, the more muscle you can have in reserve. So if somebody's a little bit worried about their hips being too big, I'll say, hey, you've got glutes there. Like, let's just work your glutes. We can capitalize on that, right? And if their waist is bigger than they want it to be, we just talk about growing the other muscles that they can benefit from. And then some of that visceral fat will be consumed by the fact that those muscles are going to be so metabolically active that we can't maintain the same visceral fat in order to keep these muscles big and strong. And, you know, I think that part's key. So as soon as we start measuring at that station for cardiovascular health, I have athletes say, I'm trying to lose weight. I'm trying to cut weight. And I say, don't you dare. That is not what we're doing. We are not dropping pounds. We can move things around if you want. You can move some of this down to your legs if you want, some of this up into some nice big arm muscles. That's what we would love to see happen. But that losing weight, I think it's really dangerous, especially for older athletes who just need that mass. They need that reserve to be able to be healthy. And if something goes wrong and you've got nothing, you've got no muscle mass to lean back on, then you're going to end up in a lot stickier situation, I think, than if you've got something to burn through.
But you also told me that it's important to have some extra fat mass too, right?
Not necessarily fat, just mass, right? Those that have mass. So if we look at non-athletic populations now, you have BMI, and BMI is what I'll talk about the most just because that is an estimate. Again, it's not perfect, but in the general population, even the sedentary older adult population, what they're finding is that a higher BMI is more compatible with survival, as long as we're not getting up into morbidly obese ranges. But actually having people have BMIs that are 24, 25 is going to be healthier than being down below in the 20s or 19 where people think they ought to be. And for athletes, for sure, at our very basic, we're finding that if they're dropping below 22 and they're coming in sort of twiggy and skin and bones, we actually take away points from them on the safe because we know those people are much more likely, based on our research, to have bone density issues. And that's a big thing that we worry about. So putting on mass, and we're not going to, I tell them, I'm not telling you to go eat Cheetos and drink Pepsi, right? I'm telling you, you need to go eat protein, more than you think you could possibly feed yourself, and lift weights and get your mass up and quit trying to worry about how skinny your hips are. You've got to have some bulk there. And don't worry about what's at your waist. That's not what's going to kill you right now. You're doing so many good things for your health by exercising. Let's just tweak the exercise routine a little bit and move some of that around the way that we know you can.
Training all by itself helps reset the body composition. Just training all by itself. If you have a sport And these are the things you need to do, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, to be able to do the sport well. It's going to be kind of hard to have self-destructive habits like overeating and whatever if you're trying to do all of the things necessary for the sport. So the sport kind of is a corrector in many respects. And then you land somewhere. I think I showed you a picture of the woman. She's an African-American woman who is 59 and is the world record holder in the sprint. And I mean, she's just got that gorgeous sprinter's body, which are larger quads and larger lower legs because you need explosive power to be able to be a sprinter for the 50 and the 100. But what I loved was she was wearing your classic sport bra and then that little kind of short pant thing that is extremely revealing, needless to say. And then in between is your little belly, right? And instead of having something that was like insanely ripped or something, she had a little something hanging over. And I'm like, okay.
Totally fine. Yes.
I love it.
Quit worrying. We have to quit worrying about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't interfere with her achieving a world record in the sprint. And I think one of the reasons why I'm kind of harping on all this is that so many women out there are like, oh, in order to join the Senior Olympics, I have to have this ripped body and I have to look like a world-class CrossFitter or something. And the answer is actually no. In so many sports, I was looking at some of the people in pickleball, in softball, basketball, in those teams and whatever. I mean, they're every single kind of body. Now, clearly, nobody is like seriously obese or something. Nobody's like that. But they may have some extra pounds on board. Doesn't seem to bother them at all.
Well, and quite honestly, this is what we talked about, little survival pouch, right? She's got a little bit of a survival pouch there. You've got to have some reserve so that you're protected against, right? Suddenly you have to have your gallbladder out and you're down for a couple of weeks and you can't exercise. Your body's going to start looking for how to feed itself, right? And how to repair things. If you've got no reserve, you're in a more difficult situation. And you talk about sport helping or sort of setting the stage well for health. There are athletes who come in, it's particularly the cyclists and the runners, those long endurance athletes, who are focused on going, but they might not have gotten the message that strength training will help them with their performance, with their endurance, with their long-term outcomes. And those are the individuals we say, like, clearly you are putting the miles in, but you've got to stop at some point and put some muscle on. You need to feed yourself, and starving yourself and cycling your brains out is actually going to put you in a less healthy situation than someone who's maybe a little bit sedentary and overweight. Just, you know, one of you gets sick and one's going to have more reserve than the other. And that would be a terrible irony, right? For someone who's worked so hard to be healthy and then not have the reserve. And if that reserves more muscle, great. You can live off of that, but you can't go with nothing.
What you just said is true for younger athletes too, right?
Yeah.
I think that whole thing about reserves.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, and about injury, I would say as well. I think we get this message that like running makes me stronger. Running does not make you stronger, not unless you've been doing nothing for years, right? Running will help your heart be healthy and it'll help your cardiovascular health and it's going to help your endurance, but you need to work on the strength that goes into running. You have to get your glutes going. You've got to get strong in order to be able to progress with your running, to be competitive with your running, to be able to keep that speed up. When Mother Nature is stripping away your muscle mass, and that happens, particularly around age 70 to 80, we're really losing muscle mass. So it's even harder for us. I go to the gym and I look around. I'm working harder than you guys. I'm older. I live in a college town, so I'm working out with 20-year-olds. And yeah, they need to do their strength training as well. And hopefully they're layering on that muscle for when they're older and things get harder.
Amen, sister. My middle name is, you know, strength training, because it is a lifesaver. And the other benefits are you look better. You look healthier. You've got the kind of curves that someone has who has muscles And I just love that. I think one of the biggest lessons we've learned today, folks out there in the Her Podcast land, is that cut yourself some slack, folks. And that is concentrate on staying consistent with your physical activity. If you want to get involved in a sport, rock on with your seriously bad self and do it. No question about it. Have some fun. And don't be getting crazy about, oh my God, you know, I want my hips to be smaller. Shut up. No, stop it right now. You know, eat clean.
Yes.
Right? Eat clean. Ultra processed foods. Hello.
No.
So eat clean and concentrate on performance and health. And then guess what happens? It's like a BTW. By the way, your body shape changed to a much healthier body shape. And if you have an extra little poochie there, so what? It doesn't interfere with your strength, your performance, and all the rest of it. You're not a 19-year-old gymnast. This isn't the way it works. You're aging, and you want to age well and have a little, as Dr. Jordre said so beautifully, reserves. So you want muscle reserves. You also want a little fat reserve. So being super, super skinny and eating, you know, a flake of lettuce for lunch is not the way to do it. It was so interesting, Becca. I just had this flashback to a group of what I love to call my peak performers. These are completely unstable people mentally who follow me everywhere when I'm climbing mountains and going down the Grand Canyon and everything. They just come with me and they go, can we come? So I was in Colorado and I was in Aspen and I was going up Green Mountain and there was a woman and I could tell you exactly who she is because she's in my book, Body for Life for Women. And it was actually a beautiful piece in it. And it was her quote. Now, Betty is her name, Betty Lawson. She was a breast cancer survivor and she was a woman in middle age. And I think by that time she was probably 60. And she'd been doing really well with it. And she had a very tough cancer, but she was doing fine. And she made it all the way to the top of the mountain. And I was waiting for her up there because I was greeting everyone as they came up. And she stood there and looked at this extraordinary panorama of the other, what we call 14s. And the 14s are the 14,000 foot mountains in height. And it's just like unspeakably beautiful there. And as she got up there, she got kind of quiet. And then she started cracking up, laughing a little hysterically. I thought, oh no, she's lost it. And then she looked at me, she says, something just occurred to me for the first time in my life. So here I am. I've just done this extraordinary athletic achievement of getting to the top. I'm celebrating. And the last thing on my mind is, gosh, I wish my hips were smaller. It was beautiful. That's it. I just stood there. I was speechless because she's right. She's absolutely right. Who the hell cares? And by the way, she looked perfectly average. She was great. She wasn't like, you know, having other issues. It's just that she's always been tormented as so many women out there, like, oh, my hips, my thighs, my butt, my, you know, just name the anatomical part and we're on it. Instead, she was just so proud of herself for the athletic achievement that she had accomplished. And she told me, and I followed her for years, from that moment on out, she never thought that way about her body again.
That's so
healthy. In a more, isn't it wonderful? And that's why I want everyone out there to just get out into nature, get out and do something that challenges yourself. And you'll be so wound up with that. The last thing on your mind is, I wish my butt was smaller.
And you'll have all those other benefits that you get with exercise, right? You get that social connection. You get that time with people. You feel good. You're having fun. It really is an upward spiral.
Yeah, I just love it. Yeah, I could just sit here and talk to you forever. And I think we're also doing that right now. But oh my gosh, Becca, there's just so much great stuff. We're going to have you back again and again because you keep publishing such extraordinary data that really, really helps us wrap our head around possibility and reality as we age, which is so important. All I can say is on behalf of everyone in the Her podcast land, please keep up the extraordinary work you're doing because we absolutely love it. And thank you. We're so grateful for all the work you do to help us extend and expand our knowledge about women and aging especially. So thank you, Becca.
Thank you for appreciating that and for having me on today. This is great.
All right. So if you want to look at a lot more of her research, Dr. Becca Jordre, J-O-R-D-R-E, University of South Dakota, just run on over there and you're going to be able to see her published data, especially as it relates to SAFE. And that's her special evaluation of the seniors. Okay. Oh my gosh. Becca, thank you. Thank you. And I also want to thank my sponsor, Solaray. Oh, their vitamins, minerals. Oh, my goodness. And herbs rooted in nature. And I'm telling you, if you're an athlete, you better be up on all your vitamins. Of course, you're going to get it from clean eating, but we're never perfect, are we? So how about that multivite and all the rest of it? And then the new Her Life Stages products. Scope it all out at solaray.com. Now take a moment, leave us a review because we just love to hear from you. We live for them, all those little reviews. Well, this has been a production of Podcast Health, and I've got a little reminder for you, and that is your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do, Senior Olympics, things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there, seize the day. Come on, challenge yourself. Let nature guide you. Thanks for listening, everyone.